Hello and welcome to episode 130 of Just Get a Real Job. I am of course your host, Jamie McKinley, and thank you as always for listening to the podcast. And if this is your first time as well, thank you very much for tuning in. Just want to quickly explain why we're a day late this week as well. Our wonderful editor, Elliot Mitchell, his laptop charger exploded on him this week. And the new one didn't arrive till today, so that's why the episode's coming out today. But you know, we've made it work and it's here. Also, the bit of music you just heard at the start, if you haven't already read the title of this week's episode, is of course the new single, Blood for Gold, by a brilliant band called The Raz. And joining us on the podcast this week is their lead vocalist, Jack McLeod. He's also one of their guitarists as well, just in case he doesn't want me to miss that out. But it was great fun chatting to Jack. We recorded this episode a few weeks ago and we got to speak about lots of things. We spoke about their upcoming second album, The Common Ground, which is going to be out on the 12th of April. We also spoke about some of Jack and the band's musical influences. We spoke about how they sort of funded and developed their first album, When Does This Become Real, which came out back in 2021. And it was interesting to speak to Jack about the realities of what it's like being in a band these days when you don't have a label behind you or big money behind you, having to sort of do things yourself, having to crowdfund, having to use social media. We'd had kind of similar conversations like this before with brilliant local Scottish bands. For example, we had Dictator on the podcast. We had them on twice actually over the last couple of years, and we'd had really similar conversations with them. And you know, it's not easy being in a band now, and it's nice for people like Jack to be honest about that and to sort of share what they've learned and some of the things that have helped them grow their sort of listener base over the last couple of years. But it was a really enjoyable conversation. Me and Jack were also reminiscing about the days of buying CDs from HMV. Some of the gigs that got Jack into music as well we discussed. Lots of interesting stuff in this week's episode, which I hope you enjoy. And be sure to check out the links to the band and their upcoming tour and album as well. But yeah, I hope you enjoy episode 130. Creative industries are merely mess. Artists lather goods are torn to shreds. Government will spoil your hopes and dreams by offering a useless retraining scheme. With such amazing talent, why can't you see that the government has decimated the industry? And now the years of hard work have been thrown away. And people who don't care, well, they will say, just get a real job. Jack, how you doing? Thank you very much for coming on Just Get a Real Job tonight. It's lovely to meet you.
Yes, no, thanks for having me, Jimmy. Appreciate it, mate.
Now, you are the singer, and I'm assuming the front man of the band called The Raz. Yeah. I'm saying the name all right there, even though I'm what it's called. I still doubt myself, you know?
Spot on. Everybody from Scotland gets it right, but the pronunciation as you go south in the British Isles is normally a bit funny, like Raz. But it's fine. All good.
Yeah, class. Well, do you want to sort of start, Jack, by telling the listeners about the band? Like, you know, I know, and particularly in Scotland, you're starting to get quite a big following and, you know, quite well known on the music scene and stuff. But do you want to sort of tell just the listeners a bit about The Raz and how long you've been making music for, etc.?
Aye, we've been a band a long time, probably longer than I anticipated when we first picked up the guitars. Mm. But we started off as a wee cover band, as bands always do. I'm talking like 2009 or something, when we were way back at school. And I would try different things and personnel changes over the years. We've never really just been on a decent course. So about 2016, decided, right, let's go for this debut album that we've been speaking about for best part of 8 years or something. So we started recording that down Peak Studios in Bradford, 2016. So if people do like my twang and how I'm coming over, hopefully they go and listen to it. So our first record, the recording process of that started off in 2016 and it ended in 2019-ish. So there was like a 3-year gap and there was personnel changes within that. But it kind of, the first album tells its own story kind of things. That's the way we liked it. It was like a big jigsaw that we managed to somehow put together. Finished off recording it over in Ireland with James Darkin, who worked with like Rihanna and stuff. So it was quite good, quite a good process, a lot of memories, and I really loved it. And now we're on number two, which is out
April,
12th April, yeah.
Exciting. So
I mean, should really have the tour dates and all these good dates.
It'll all be linked underneath the podcast. So we'll keep referring to that throughout the interview.
See link below.
Yes, click the link below. What I love about the album title, When Does This Become Real? It sounds very much apparent to what you're saying, because obviously being a band for such a long time, recording, you know, starting the recording of it 2016, what, it came out 2021, right? The album?
Yeah, it got delayed.
Yeah.
Me because of, coronavirus, that word that everybody doesn't like to say anymore. So I got delayed. The main reason for the delay was obviously the tour, but in the end, we didn't actually release it when we could tour anyway. So we kind of bit a bullet there just to get it out, but it was more for the distribution, as in vinyl and stuff. So there was a delay then, and the tour got pushed back 9 months, I think it was, which was a bit abolic, but it was good. The full tour was pretty much sold out. Amazing.
No, it's glad, but it must have felt like, when does this sort of become real? And it is real now, and it's all,
as usual, it would have been like a last minute thing, the title, just like this one was. It was kind of like scammed about, let's go and get this title together. And when we came up with the idea of When Does This Become Real, it was kind of tongue in cheek and came back to bite us because the delays. but it was good. It was a really good process. I was glad with the traction and the hype that it created, and hopefully same again.
We'll get into the album in a bit more detail, and the album that's coming, and the singles that are coming, and the tours, etc., and the influences. But how would you describe the band, just for anyone that might not have heard you? Like, what sort of music? Like, what genre? And I know the word genre is very like kind of bullshit these days. Like,
I feel like you can just kind of chuck yourself in any genre. I feel like we're more truer to the alternative than we previously were. I would always like to put us in the alternative genre category. I even done it back in like 2018-19, but we were probably more like indie rock then. But we've not lost that tag completely, but we've kind of ventured away more down the rockier route. And then there's always the wee curveballs that definitely fit the alternative category. So,
I mean, genres become quite, the whole music industry, which we can also talk about, is a bit of a minefield at the moment, and having had loads of other, musicians and bands on the podcast over the last few years as well, like they'd, very much been saying the same thing, especially for a grassroots band like yourself that's, funded an album and things like that. It's, it's really not an easy landscape to navigate. So I'm interested to talk to you about that as well. Just to cast your mind back, like many, many years, do you remember like your sort of earliest creative influences? So do you remember when you first got into music and started playing the guitar and stuff like that?
So originally I was just the singer, which was class. You never had to haul an amp or guitars or guitar pedal boards or stuff like that. So maybe I should have just not picked up the guitar. But so basically we started off, and there was five of us, two guitarists, a bassist, drummer, me. And brutally, we sacked the rhythm guitarist because I thought that I could not do a better job. That's even nastier than sacking him. But I just thought I really wanted to play guitar. Like the main focus and the main inspiration to it was, so my brother, I've got a lot to thank him for musically, because he was the one that took me to gigs, took me to my first gigs, and took me to see Pete Dockery at HMV Picture House in 2008. Was it 2009? Should know this, eh? But anyway, he took me to see Pete. I'm pretty sure it was an over-18s gig. Maybe not, but somehow I got in. And as soon as Pete Dockery came out, even though he was mangled, he had the whole crowd in the palm of his hand just like that. It was just him and the guitar. He was on his solo tour. Mm. And right away, I can remember it just clapping, going, I want to do that. I want that. That looks good. So for that moment, I was like, right, guitar. Ordered a guitar online, sat in my room, watched YouTube tutorials, and forced myself to play Don't Look Back Into the Sun by the Libertines. It was like, if my fingers could take any more, they were like blood, and had a leather feel by the end of week three or four. But I was determined, and that was pretty much it for me. That was the pin drop. Like,
and had you always been interested in music when you were like really young, like before you'd even considered what a band was, etc.?
Aye, so there was always music around the house, but I can never. To be fair, it was more poppier stuff. My dad back in the day was into like Pistols and whatever, but I feel like I can't really. I've always had a conversation after a few beers with my mum and dad. Why, like, what music did we listen to back in the day? Because I can never really remember it. I'm a big Hibs fan, so there was always the Proclaimers and stuff, but I can never really like pinpoint what was happening. There were always like, I don't know, Rod Stewart or like, I think Robbie Williams. I can always remember. Mind that the album he'd done when they recreated the 66 World Cup, World Cup win.
I think I can see the album.
So
album
I don't know what I don't know what it's called, but I can remember that. And I can remember the Take That Greatest Hits. Came with the two T's or like ups. So they're like visually, they're the only ones that I can kind of pinpoint as I used to play. Actually, Mike and the Mechanics. There's another one.
They ring a bell. Like, what do they sing again? We have to play a wee sample for the listeners. I'll
Mike
edit
and the
this
Mechanics
in.
Is looking back over my shoulder. You know that one?
It's not ringing a bell to me, but I'm gonna Google this after.
There's a couple of good tracks that I know we've got.
Looking back over my shoulder, I can see that look in your eye. I never dreamed it could be over. I never wanted to say goodbye.
It was more poppier stuff, so I can never really remember the guitar music as such that I then got into. But when obviously I did get into a band, my dad said, "Oh, I used to go follow Status Quo and seen the Pistols. We used to listen to the Clash and stuff." So I guess there was a wee bit of music background. And my granddad, who I actually never met, he was in bands. So he was a drummer. So there must have been something genetically.
Yeah, there's always something.
But my brother was definitely the one. He was always like, introduced me to The View, Arctic Monkeys, stuff like that. So, but he ventured into the more American cheddar scene, like U Meet Six, and that kind of
was never for me that stuff.
Nah, exactly.
Not to be snobby about music, you like what you want, but I could.
I rooted more like I was obsessed with like Stone Roses and stuff when I was younger, and then obviously the Beatles was massive. So,
No, I feel like not everyone, but like the Beatles are just one of those formative bands that get you into music because they just teleport you into everything, don't they?
I'm surprisingly was quite late to sitting down with the whole kind of back catalogue with the Beatles, because I was at work, so I would have been beyond 16 when I actually, what is this band about kind of thing. So I don't know why I was so late, I guess, when I talk about Robbie Williams and Take That in my house.
I mean,
there you go.
There's no, everyone has their own, you know, way into it. I think the thing with the Beatles is that, like, I mean, I listened to them when I was like maybe 13, 14, but even now, I'll if I do dip into them, I'll hear a song and I'm like, I've never heard this tune because there's so much of it. You're
so
like,
songs,
what is this random song on this like 1964 B-side album? I've never heard it.
Obviously, I definitely heard the songs and I could tell, oh, that one is by the Beatles, but studying the Beatles to the extent of what I've done over my life, it's been quite a condensed period where people will be like, right, introduced to the Beatles at like 8 and they've always been with the Beatles kind of thing. But I was like 16, I think it was one of my foremen at work. It's like, you need to listen. He was obsessed with the Beatles. And it was, so what year would that have been? 2000 and, I don't know, 11 or something. So CDs were still kicking about. I literally came into work with a stack of CDs, like burn them to your iPod, and that was it.
Oh, I mean, those were the days, burning stuff.
Amazing,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah,
how good.
I used to go HMV in Kirkcaldy in Fife where I grew up, and like buy a CD every week or a poster, one or the other, a band poster or a CD, and it was class. You'd be like, oh,
it sounds very, very similar, mate.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, I think it was what a sort of quite a traditional working class upbringing was, especially in like sort of Scotland. You just, music was an escape, wasn't it? So
yeah, so me and my brother, we shared the Corsa. Is it XTI or whatever the abbreviation was for leather seats and a wee bit of noise to the exhaust? I don't know what that. But we shared a car. Obviously, he's 2 years older than me, so he would have been 19, I was 17. And literally every cup holder, or what do you call them, door cards, every single one was just stacked to CDs, glove box a lot. And we used to literally finish work, sometimes on the same job, drive straight to HMV, buy CD or two CDs each, a wee poster, and then I burn the hell at them.
The only thing with the CDs that which I don't miss was like how easily they'd break the boxes and that. Or you'd have the wrong CD in the wrong box, and it just became a whole thing. I mean, you kind of touched on it a lot anyway, like in your first answer, but the next part of this question is about how where you're from has influenced you as a creative person and obviously influenced the band. So we were saying off air that you're from Preston Pans, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, I mean, we do have a few American listeners and stuff, but Preston Pans is like a sort of smallish town not that far away from Edinburgh.
Yeah, basically, just down the coast, the coast of Edinburgh. Yeah, a very traditional town as well, to be honest. It dates miles back, but the bookmark ones are the Batley Preston Pans and Preston Grange Minor Museum, stuff like that. But let's not go on a history lesson. so how does our location influence us, basically? Yeah, I don't know. I guess we've always had influences from Scottish bands. Like, as I say, The View, especially back in the day, were massive. Me and my brother followed them. So I guess I wouldn't pinpoint it to Preston Pans as such. I guess I would say Scotland as a whole. It's kind of, we've always listened to Scottish artists. And I guess you could probably see it in the creative aspect, in the studio and stuff, when times are like tense, there's always a bit of patter crack just to break the ice. And I've carried that with us everywhere.
And is those sort of working class roots very much apparent in the lyrics and the music that you guys write as well?
Aye, definitely. I didn't venture too far out my vocabulary, otherwise I end up scrolling back in later years and going, I still don't know what that word means. I would never ever do that either.
You're not following Alex Turner's footsteps.
No, I've not got a thesaurus by my side when I'm doing it. No, I'm writing it from the heart.
But in growing up and stuff, was there like a music scene to be part of? Like, was there loads of other bands at school? Was there like places for you guys to rehearse and play vet gigs and things like that?
So as I say, we started off as a cover band, and we would have been 15 going on 16, so some pubs wouldn't even have us. Our old guitarist, his dad was in a band, so we just looked up to them. They just literally let us use the amps, let us use the kit, and we just pretty much toured around with them. Whenever they were playing Pub in the Pans, we would always play however many songs we could before them, and we'd always have a good wee following. It was good times. Very young and naive, eh? I turned up absolutely trash for like 2 days on the drink and trying to perform. But it was good. We would always get asked to play like weddings and stuff alongside them. So anywhere they went, really, we just latched on to them. I can never really remember other bands of our age. We looked up to bands from Edinburgh. Edinburgh was like, oh, I need to get into Edinburgh and get on the scene. It was bands like OK Social Club, 1004s, Pose Victorious, bands like that that were kicking about in Edinburgh. And we, as soon as we started writing our own material, we pretty much went into town and played that. I think, if I'm right in saying, one of our first gigs in the town was like, did it be 2011 or 12? I think there's a video of me with a skinhead and GRV, which is now Mash House. Fred Perry polo shirt, of course, and a random scarf. So I mean, I'd need to look back in dates. My grandma's good at keeping dates. I should have been like my gran. She's got a wee scrapbook with all the dates and that.
That's class.
Brilliant.
You could just say anything to me for the listeners to go, I believe it was in this. 2011 on the 20th of February. Aye, we did it then.
That's what I need to start doing, actually. I'm always stuttering when I come to dates and stuff. But aye. So we were always wanting to get into the scene of Edinburgh, and then we ventured further afield in Glasgow, and good, really good times.
Class. Well, I'm looking forward to sort of talking a bit more about the trajectory of the band and how the sort of album came about and your sort of gradual journey into sort of trying to make this into more of a, you know, full-time profession and touring and stuff. But I wondered if you had a favourite word or phrase from Preston Pans, which I'm interested to hear.
A good question. Actually, I read it in the pre-questions and I thought about it and I thought, surely there's one, just forget about that and get put on the spot, and I've absolutely bottled it, innit? I honestly guess it would just be like a Scottish word. It's not really Preston Pans orientated.
There'll be a lot of East Coast words that I'll use that we'll both have just assumed were from where we grew up.
Aye, true. Dreek's a brilliant, and I think that's me.
It's a great word.
It's made a chukder thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I like Dreek it. That's my, a Dreek. Dreek, yeah. That's one of my favourite. Dreek it or Dreek are like one of my favourite words. They're class.
I actually didn't use the Scots as much as I should, to be honest. I guess it's more or the swear words that you use in everyday life.
Oh, yeah, you can use them if you want.
I'll maybe just pop up as we go through this.
Yeah, don't worry, we can circle back. Yeah, you'll be talking about the album and you'll just say some random word about what are you talking about? Right. No worries. I find it interesting. This question, often people get stumped by that one actually, and then they'll email me the next week going, it was this one.
I'll just put that in the back of my mind.
So I guess going into the sort of, I mean, again, you've been a band for a long time, but while you were sort of venturing from being a cover band into sort of what you guys have become now, like, was there like a moment where you kind of thought, I'd love it if we could do this full time, or let's take this really seriously and try and get something off the ground? Like, do you remember when that moment would have been?
I guess we still think that now, to be honest. To put the tools down would be fantastic. But I guess there's like milestones, isn't there? It's kind of like the ladder of life. You just kind of get up to the next tread. Like, you write your first song, then you write your first group of songs, then you put it on a disc, and then so it's it's pretty much winging it until...
Oh, of course.
You bring it until you make it. So, I guess the reaction with the first album was really good. It was kind of unexpected, I guess, just with the nature of the world at the time as well. We didn't really think, like, it was a big risk to put it out. But we, as I said, with the songs we'd been playing for, I mean, The Time Is Now, that's the opening track of that album, there's a version that was recorded in 2013. Or it would have been recorded in 2012. And actually, when I was sorting out my files on this computer, it is the first file that's on this that exists, and it is 2012.
Wow.
So that's when I wrote that track. So I guess the reaction to the first album definitely made us go, right, if we keep pushing here, we're making serious ground here. So we just had to kind of not put all the eggs in one basket, but put everything that we possibly could into it. And good things came out of it. We sold at the tour, played Isle of Wight, played Why Not, supported Jamie Webster at Barrowlands, supported Skylights at O2 in Leeds. So they were all like, Radio 1 plays, Radio X, BBC Radio Scotland, Amazing Radio, some Raj, like, multi-million pound corporations in America, like K-Rock and Cyrus XM. And so when you get that back from putting all your motivation and dedication into it, you see that, right, we need to go again. So, as I say, you're just kind of
trying to build on that momentum as well.
You're just keep on chipping away, and hopefully the penny does drop. But it's a tough industry we're in.
I feel
can't rely on it.
I feel like particularly music at the moment is very, very weird, because obviously streaming, and we'd had like people like Matt Hickman of Brown Bear and Sylvie and Dictator and all that on this podcast loads, and we kind of talked about this a lot, but like, it is a really hard industry to crack, especially if you don't have money behind you, or, you know, a management team behind you and stuff. It can be quite tricky to sort of navigate. So when you went into the album in 2016, when you started recording it, were you guys having to, like, were you self-funding at the time? Were you trying to build a following? Did you have a big following, or did it all sort of happen more gradually than that?
I mean, we had a decent following. I wouldn't say it was massive. I think what benefited our following massively was the interaction online to the first album when it got released, because obviously everybody's locked up, that sounds terribly. We were all indoors, so social media was the main, like, source of interaction. So there was, it was like a community kind of thing on Twitter. And then when we did finally get the tour, literally all the people that were mentioning us and talking within our threads were at the gigs. So it was just like, it was amazing to see. But yeah, it was self-funded. I mean, we're still self-funding it. I don't know if we'll ever get to the stage where we can have a big pot of money. I mean, we'd have to sell thousands of records for that to happen. And we'll never ever break even, I don't think. I mean, hopefully we do, but I don't think we will, because the amount, we'll certainly not get the time back, that's for sure.
It's the big part of it as well, is time. I think people forget about that. I mean, it's not just money, it's also the time and energy that and hours you're putting in.
Yeah, I mean, like, as standard, we'll practice twice a week. We'll go up to the room from 8 till normally about 10:30, 11 on a Tuesday and a Thursday. We'll rehearse as much as we can, but because we've all got full-time jobs and because of the stuff that needs done, we're doing it ourselves, so we need to kind of be together to do it. So that time that we've got together, it's like, it's double valuable, because we need to rehearse and we need to get through. We need to change the font of this website, we need to update the mailing list, we need to make sure our Shopify account's up and running. Oh, have you done the PRS claims? Have you done, it's like endless. And you put on top of that, so Lee is decent at all your video editing stuff. I've been to say decent, he's amazing at it. So he takes that on himself as well, which again is a hell of a lot of time to create reels, blah, blah, blah. So aye, and you didn't want it to eat into your personal life. I mean, I've got two little sprogs now and a wife that I need to keep happy. So if it eats into my personal life anymore, I'll be filing for a divorce. But I mean, it's really hard to balance it all and stay as positive as you possibly can be. But it's like a drug, isn't it? You just want to keep going. I mean, I've always said to myself and said openly to the boys, until we're not enjoying it, then let's keep doing
this. No, I mean, that's what it's all about as well, fundamentally.
Costs thousands, but I mean, the memories you're going to get for this is, I mean, look, I've just ticked off so many, like, achievements, and what else would I be doing? Like, really? So, aye, why not?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, it's like, I suppose it's going back to the reason you started it in the first place, isn't it? It's like, you know, because you love it. I think that's really interesting what you're saying, and I appreciate it as well, because there'll be a lot of people listening maybe want to start bands or who are in bands, and I appreciate that you're being very honest about the day-to-day of all. And when we had Zach from Dictator on a couple of years ago, I remember him talking about how every time a band meeting is a business meeting as well. He's like, we're rehearsing songs, but we're talking about the social media strategy or whatever it is. So
yeah,
I think that's the honest reality of it. So I really do appreciate it.
I mean, there's no point in beating around the bush. It's if you're wanting to start a band, don't do it. No, I'm kidding. Make sure you're dedicated, because otherwise it's utterly pointless. That's what I'll say. It's fine starting a band and playing covers, even writing your own songs, but if you're wanting to go down the route of trying to make it some sort of income or whatever, then you need to be dedicated. It's not for the light-hearted, let's say.
It's certainly not cheap either, is it? I'm sure.
No, it's not. It's laughable when you get offered gigs in London for £50 and you're from Edinburgh. I mean, when it gets to Adrian's Wall, mate.
No, literally not these days either. Jack, before I sort of ask you a bit more about the album and stuff in detail, I wanted to sort of just ask about, like, you were talking about these sort of day-to-day strategies, but like, how do you go about building a following online and stuff then? Because that seems to be like the common way for a lot of bands that are grassroots now. So how do you guys use things like Twitter or X or whatever it is now, like, to like capture that?
It's, to be fair, it's something we're still a bit like curious towards. We've not got a team. We've not got a social media team that is going to tell us how to do it. So you're literally researching online, asking people for advice, whatever. So we've done it in the past, Facebook adverts, and put whatever £50 to £100 on it, and it's reached less than a natural post. And then you do one where, say, you put £20 on it, it does really well. And then the next post that you put up naturally does ridiculously poorly. So it's like a catch-22. Do you put money into online adverts, or I'm still scratching my head at it, to be honest. We've got a radio plugin company who have done everything since 2019 for us, and they're amazing. And we've got a guy doing our online marketing, which is like our reviews and podcasts and whatever. But yeah, the online stuff, it's really, really difficult, especially when you put posts up naturally, they do well, and then the next one doesn't do so well. Our algorithm sucks.
Oh, I know, it's a fucking pain in the arse. I find that doing this podcast, like, honestly, it's like one week you get 120 likes and the next week you get 4 likes, and it's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, it just honestly, it's
back
just
in the day, it was amazing. You used to go on Twitter, used to see the most recent tweet from the people you follow. How fucking simple is that?
I don't think
it's
any
like
of my followers, yeah,
live chat room pretty much, right? And people are just bouncing stuff back and forward like that. But that was Twitter back in the day. Now you go on it, for me anyway, it'll be Morbid Culture, this profile, and it's a guy burning to death in the middle of a motorway or something. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Why?
Oh,
how am I seeing this and I'm not seeing my own band's post?
It's crazy. You don't see like anything that you follow anymore. It's like all these people, you're like, oh, hold on, did I follow this wank? And you're like, no, I don't follow them, but they're coming up. It's, yeah, the same on Instagram or anything now. It's like so impossible to like crack the algorithm, and then you finally crack it and it changes how it works the next week.
Right.
Like, right,
so
give up.
Is hashtags still a thing? I'm not, like, is that still a thing? That used to be brilliant. It used to be able to start retrending and stuff, but now it's like by word, so it's a fucking joke.
Yeah, well, so if you're listening, social media is not easy either.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, But, you know, give it a try, why not? And if you find out how it works, be sure to let us both know, because it'd be much appreciated.
Please let us know.
Let's talk about the album in a bit more depth than, like, you know, the first one. Like, what were the sort of influences on this album? Like, I mean, from listening to it, like, as you say, it's kind of a bit alternative rocky. There's different sounds in there. I'm getting a bit of Britpop in there. I'm getting some indie as well. But, like, what were the sort of influences on you guys while you were making it?
I mean, because it was a big period of time that it was recorded in, the influences changed. I actually didn't want the first set of songs even on the album, but I mean, funds were tight as always, and we were kind of put a line in the sand and move on, get that set of songs out. That's the story so far, and move on. And towards the latter stage, we recorded Our Design, and If You Never Try, I think we tweaked it to suit the direction that it was going in. So those songs lean towards the new record more than the original set of songs, if you know what I mean. So the original set of songs are all the indie ones, and they're definitely, the Britpop ones, the more indie ones, like Sweet Talkers, like, I think it's actually, sounds like a backwards Pigeon Detective song or something. So there you go, there's like, that's the kind of era that it's leaning towards. And then there's the songs in between that were, I mean, we always had that kind of rockier, we'll always love to dip our toe in that rockier kind of waters, but I guess it is, it kind of speaks for itself for me when you look at the tracks that are on it. They've all got their own wee story, which is like our story as well. So towards the latter stages, the maturer songs are the rockier ones, and then the ones at the early stages of the recording are more the indie ones. And that's pretty much how majority of the band, the palette changed musically. And then, as I say, the later ones lean a lot more towards the second record, more rockier vibes. It's got more of a groove, sits more on like a bench with the Queens of Stone Age and Foo Fighters, Black Keys, that kind of desert rock's the right term, but I guess it's got that fun thing to say, desert rock.
I like it.
Not that we're trying to be Josh Homme, but they definitely sit there, especially Black Keys. Black Keys was, we've always liked the Black Keys, we always listened to them, but it's the keyboard sound we're always trying to nail. Like, that keyboard sounds amazing. It pierces through, but it's not too powerful. Sits nicely. And I think the second record definitely sits right in amongst that kind of vibe.
Black Keys were a quite formative one for me, actually. They were the second ever band I saw live. And when I was in a cover band, they were one of the bands I used to, cover a lot of the class.
Yeah. Gold on the Ceiling, we used to cover that when we had to play like charity dues or whatever.
it's a tune though, isn't it?
Oh, brilliant, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And that sort of 2013 era, they were massive. They're still obviously quite well known, but I think that was their sort of peak, I think.
Yeah. I think if it was the Hydro or the SECC that we seen them.
Yeah, I think it's the same. Remember. It probably would have been the same gig, but I can't remember which one it was. I mean, maybe was it the SECC? I don't even know, the Hydro wasn't quite ready then, was it? 2013, I think it was.
2013.
We're probably the same gig we're at then. It's a small world.
Definitely. We've probably been to a lot of same gigs.
Before we go into the new album, which is really exciting, and I know you've got some singles coming out, which this will hopefully help promote as well. But the time is now, obviously, particularly. I know on Spotify has done really, really well. Like, I know all the songs have got a lot of listens, but that's the one on Spotify that was coming up like quite big. So is that, sort of the lead single, would you say, for the album?
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was the first single of the album. I think it done quite well, because the part that I hated the most, the speech at the start, because I'm speaking in my natural twang, I think that it kind of hit home to a lot of people. Kind of had that, I guess it leans in that Trainspotting kind of category, that kind of speech, Scottish speech. Like, but there's a wee story behind that. So we recorded that in Glasgow in 2017. James Darkin, who, as I said, worked with Rihanna and all these big names, we flew him over for Ireland to record it with us. It was the first time I'd met him. He's a crazy, crazy guy, like amazing, but crazy. And I had this idea, it was like halfway through the recording session, and I had this idea, I was like, I would really like a speech or something, like at the start, like, you know, I hear like those clips, say Martin Luther King or whatever, and those kind of crackly American speeches that are so iconic. I was like, I want something like that at the start of the song. So there's me in the corner researching all these speeches and getting like down a rabbit hole with all these names and stuff with American preachers. And he's like, what are you doing? And obviously I said to him, I'm looking for like a speech. He's like, well, just go up to that fucking mic and speak into it. Speak what you want to like deliver. And I was All right. So I had this wee thing jotted down and the speech of time is now. And I was doing it. I was like, I feel like a fucking idiot here. Because no offense to that, but I never ever listened to podcasts back because I just don't like listening to myself speak. Other people might say different, but I don't like hearing myself speak like as through headphones or whatever. So when we were replaying it and trying to get the good take, I was like, this is fucking shit. This isn't the route I want to go down. He's like, no, stick with it, stick with it. So we got a good take. And I walked back into the control room. I just like, nah, I need to drop this. He's like, right, I tell you what, we'll mute it for the rest of the session. Just mute it and forget that it's there. I was like, right, fine. And then we just muted it. We got on with it, finished recording. I never heard the speech back. And then I don't know if it was maybe on the last day or if it was when the mix came back. I'm not sure. But the mix came back and then the speech was on it. I was like, fucking hell, that speech. And everybody, they were all like buzzing with it. Like all the boys were. And I was like, I was in a kind of conundrum with myself. I was like, oh, do I roll with it? And then I'm quite happy we did. It was quite one of the moments on tour where I got a megaphone out and done the speech. And
I really like the speech, man. I really like it. I think it makes it stand out. I think it's I don't know, I like it when it feels more.
It's a bit different, I guess.
Authentic and, like, as you say, it's very true to you and the band and where you're from and stuff. So I think it was cool. I like add something to the song.
Now is the time, a time you'll look back on, a time you adopt as inspiration. You will recollect this time, this moment, right now. Motivate yourself towards success. Overcome, take over. The time is now.
It's good. And the track, I'm not sure if it's because of the speech or whatever, but it's been used commercially quite a bit. It's been used on Sky Sports and it was used in one of the Old Firm games. There was, you know, the montages of
a player.
It was Kyoko scoring for Celtic and it was our song over it. And the other time was an Edinburgh derby at the end of it. Luckily it was...
Oh, class.
Well, Hibs didn't get beat, so it was okay.
If
they got beat, I would have been like, get that, Dave, fuck. But
that must be pretty special. That must be special, though, for you.
It was a draw, so there was a wee highlights at the end of it, and yeah, the song was being used. It got used on the Sky Sports Golf. Not sure what that would have been, but it got used on the darts as well. It was like a montage. I'm not sure if it was one of the big players or whatever, but
it's a good tune though, and you know, our design as well, I really like that one. I'd say that would be my favourite from the album. Do you have a favourite song from it? I mean, I know it must be hard.
I mean, it changes quite a lot. It's probably like any album I've ever owned, the favourite song, if I was to listen to it one week, would change from 6 weeks time, kind of thing. But Fuel to Fire has always been there, just because the bagpipes, quite a special thing for me personally. Just my granddad he absolutely loves traditional music, Ceilidh music, and it took me to like the tattoo. So it's always been quite iconic. That shivering sound of bagpipes is always putting the hairs on the back of the...
I mean, it's home. It's home, isn't it? Bagpipes are home.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. That stupid drone at the start of it. You know what's coming in.
You hate it. It's annoying when you're on the street of Glasgow or Edinburgh. You're on the phone to somebody, though, and somebody's fucking playing them. You're like, fuck's sake. But when you're I don't know, when you hear them played on a proper tune, it's like, special.
It's even more special when they're kind of out with their environment. So if you hear them, I've travelled with Scotland and hearing them like in stadiums abroad, is just in Wembley or someone, was fucking brilliant. Never get sick of that. Like,
special.
To the fire.
Well, tell us about the new sort of albums that are, that's coming out, and like some of the singles that are going to be accompanying it, because this will probably come out in a few weeks. So hopefully, I think you've got a single that will be out when this episode drops. So
yeah, brilliant. So that single is called Blood for Gold, track 3 of the upcoming album. So yeah, it's already been playing on Radio X, and boys at Amazing Radio are absolutely loving it as well. So yeah, it's had its fair share of airplay already, and it's for people that have heard it, they're absolutely raving about it. So yeah, hopefully that does well, and hopefully gets tossed about on the streaming services and the playlists and whatever. So that drops on the 1st of March, Friday the 1st of March. So yeah, looking forward to that, because it's been, I don't even know, years since we had a
2022 song, 2022 anyway. Was the last time you put like a new thing on Spotify, right? So a couple of years.
Yeah, that probably would have been a remix EP, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, the remix EP of our
Better
design.
Waves done it for us. So I would have been early 2022 is probably all. So it's been a long time coming. I guess on the grand scheme, 2 years isn't too bad. But so we finished recording the album end of last summer. Is that right? I think so. July, I think July was the last kind of recording session. We recorded it in the Motor Museum in Liverpool, which is quite an iconic recording studio. That's where Supersonic was recorded.
Oh, fuck, that's cool.
Amongst like thousands of other, well, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of other amazing tracks. Echo and the Bunnymen, Blossoms have been in there, Coral, OMD, Andy McCluskey, he actually owned the studio, is it two owners ago? But so we recorded it there with Al Groves. It was really good because, as I say, with the first record, it was kind of itty bitty. So this was good to kind of have a bunch of tracks. I think originally we went down with 6 songs or something, but we knew that was going to be the record. So it was quite a good process, to be honest. It was, you were not chasing your tail as such, but you always had a time frame, which we need, because otherwise we just fart about. So we went down, say, with 6 songs, record. We never ever finished recording. We kind of kept ahead of ourselves as well. So we would go down, maybe finish 2.5 and then have 1.5 to complete. So every time we're going down, we're always touching the previous songs that we had been doing, as well as new ones. So it kind of, there was never like, right, that song's finished, kind of park it. It was always kind of overlapping each other, which I think was good, because all the songs sound like a unit. They sound compact. You know they're kind of recorded at the same time in the same place. Obviously they sound different, but yeah, you can hear it as a body of music, unlike the first record, which is like a big jigsaw puzzle.
But from what you were saying, the first record sounds like it was made over so many years that you'd changed as a person from some of the songs to some of the songs, whereas now it seems to have happened in a quicker time frame. So it'll probably reflect where you are, guys are a bit more at now.
Yeah, I guess that kind of speaks for itself, as in how we've done, as in we had a wee bit of money there from the first record to get the first kind of sessions paid for or whatever. So we're in a much better and healthier place. We aren't now, but we were after spending thousands on a record. But the way we saw it was, we need to do this right. It needs to be done properly. It's a bit of art and it's out forever. So let's make this as good as it possibly can be. And I think we've done that. We've definitely done that. I'm really, really proud of it. We've literally got our test pressings, got them last Friday, and yeah, never had it off. So yeah, as we spoke about, being so busy and being kind of detached from the actual music, like everything band related, you just, to get yourself back to that, you just listen to your new album and then you go, fucking hell.
it's exciting
mate, that's the word for it, exciting. So that gets you back on a positive train, like.
Yeah, and what's the album called, and like, you know, when people,
so sorry, I went on a
no, you're fine, don't worry, that's what podcasts are for, mate.
So yeah, The Common Ground, again, it was kind of title that we chucked together. We're so indecisive as a band because there's 5 different personalities, which is brilliant because it speaks volumes for the music, especially this album more than the first. The influences are so vast. Like, it could go from jungle to fucking Metallica. Literally, the span of influences has been amazing. And the recording process was like that as well. We were quite adventurous with where we were going with, and we always wanted to do that. We always wanted to try new things, and I was good with that. I got the best out the band, and the memories down there were absolutely brilliant, absolutely class. It probably took a wee bit longer than it first expected. We actually wanted the album out last year, but I guess it all boils down to funds and time as well. Two of us had kids last year, so as you can imagine, those kind of, there's like 2 month period, and then it was a month, and then it was another 2 month period where we're pretty much out the equation. But it was amazing. So we're quite glad we got 12 tracks as well. The last one was 11. So we're quite glad to get the 12. And on vinyl as well. It's up for pre-order on our Shopify.
Yeah, click the link.
Click the link below. It's up with t-shirts, tote bags, blah, blah, blah. All the above, different designs of t-shirts. Go and order it, please. Help us out. It would mean a lot.
Really excited.
Going on tour as well, so yeah.
Yeah, tell us about the tour. So are you doing another UK tour, sort of kicking around the place? Playing in Edinburgh on the 27th, right? 27th of April.
27th of April, La Belle Angèle, which is going to be brilliant. It's our biggest headline show to date, so it's a wee bit deceiving. But yeah, looking forward to that. It's on the same night as a good friend, Josh Taylor, the boxer. He's boxing down in Leeds, so we're trying to work someone out that we can, like, as soon as we are finished, we drop a projector and the boxing just goes in the background. So we're trying to work someone out like that, because I mean there's probably hundreds of people that will be undecided if to go down to boxing. I think what works in our favor is it's in Leeds, so it's not like Glasgow or something, so hopefully I'll not be too affected by it. But yeah, we start off in Liverpool on the 20th of April, and then we're off to Newcastle at the Clooney on the 25th of April. Then we go to Manchester, the Lodge at Deaf Institute on the 26th of April, the big one in Edinburgh on the 27th at La Belle. Then we play Margate, the Albion Rooms, which as we spoke about Pete Dockery, the Libertines were a massive influence. So we're doing a free entry, kind of stripped back session. It's like a kind of pre-warm-up gig for London. So really looking forward to that, actually. So that's the 3rd of May. And then the 4th of May, we finish off the tour in London at the Grace. So yeah, please buy your tickets. They seem to be doing pretty well, so hopefully we can get a few sold out.
It's really exciting. Well, I mean, and as I said before, links to the album pre-order and all the singles and all the previous work in the show notes as well. Jack, I know we've been speaking for an hour, so I'll start to wrap things up. I've got some quick fire questions for you. These are just some fun ones. The first of them is a song that's had a big impact on you. So it doesn't necessarily need to be your favourite song, but just a song that has had a big impact on you personally.
Don't Look Back Into the Sun. Let's go for that. It was the first song I learned on guitar, so yeah.
Nice. And the next quick fire one is, do you have a favourite B-side from any artist? I loved hearing people's favourite B-sides. I think it's so interesting.
I'm going to go for, since it's fresh in my memory, talking about the view and stuff, Done Deal was on Five Rebeccas. I hope I got that right. Five Rebeccas, I think it is. Yeah, because my mother's shot caller. Yeah, Done Deal. And it's one of these songs that's like not very view-like, so quite experimental and quite raj. There's the word. Right.
Nice. I don't know the B-sides of them that well, so it's interesting. First gig you ever went to, which I think you maybe mentioned earlier, but just recap.
Yeah, Pete Dockery at HMV Picture House in 2009, and the week after I went to see Oasis at Murrayfield with Reverend and the Makers, The Enemy and Kasabian as the support acts, which was fucking what a week.
good amount there, like you did well for your first few. What was the last gig you were at? Last gig you saw live?
What was the last gig I was at? That's terrible, eh?
Scratching my brains as well, actually. Yeah.
Are we going for paid tickets here or just like...
Whatever, man, whatever. A gig's a gig.
It would have been one of ours, like, but...
I'm trying to remember.
That is shocking. Aye, what about you?
I think I saw, I mean, it feels like cheating because he's kind of a friend now, but Matt Hickman Brown Bear, so they played an acoustic gig last December. Yeah, yeah. So I think that was the last band I saw or gig I saw. I don't know, I feel like I've fallen out going to gigs since lockdown. See, since the pandemic, I just don't feel like I go to as many.
I'm the same.
And it's so pricey now.
I am the exact same. I know. I talked myself out and I regret it. I talked myself out paying, what was it, £58 or something to go see the War on Drugs at the Hydro. And I sure just paid it. They're one of my favourite bands.
They're class, actually, yeah, they're really good.
I was just in one of the moods where I was like, I'm not fucking paying that.
It's so pricey now though, isn't it? It's so expensive. You get like 3 gigs a year if you really want to treat yourself to big bands. Like, that's so pricey.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to see The Smile, which is Tom York's side project. So I think, am I right in saying that 2 tickets was like £149 or something? It's in the Armadillo, so it's quite like special, so I wasn't too worried, but it's like,
it's like pricey, isn't it? pricey.
So if you asked me in a couple of weeks, I would have said that, and that would have been an easy one. But
alas. Okay, best venue you've had the pleasure to perform in live?
Barrowlands.
Class. That is sick. And if you could play any festival or any venue, what would it be? What would the dream be?
Oh, it's got to be Glasgow, isn't it? Got to be. Or see if they get Tea in the Park back.
Tea in the Park back, man. Bring it back.
None of this hybrid city festival. The good old Bilardo days.
That was
I'll play that main stage. That would be fucking brilliant. Actually, I mean, obviously you go for the biggest, but see that King Tut's tent. Iconic, mate.
If I could
play the headline Saturday, mate, that would be amazing.
There you go. You don't want much, you know what I mean? It's very reasonable, but yeah, very reasonable. And if you guys could open for any artist, who would it be?
Right now, Black Keys or Queens of Stone Age.
Class. That's the end of the quickfire. I've just got two more questions for you, but
just get a real job.
Obviously, yeah. the name of this podcast is Just Get a Real Job. But what's the most memorable real job / part time job you'd ever had to work? And memorable doesn't necessarily need to be a good thing. It can be a good or a bad thing.
So the first one that came to my mind, because you said memorable. So I played a lot of golf back in the day. I was actually pretty decent. I don't know, have you played golf? Are you a golfer? No?
I mean, I played it. I wouldn't say I was a golfer.
So do you know how, well, the old handicap system, you know how handicaps work, guy?
Vaguely.
When I was 12, I was off. When I was 12, I was off 12, which was like pretty decent. I never really got below that, so I was pretty decent at the time and was always floating about the golf course, me and my brother. And my brother took on a job at Meadowmill Golf Range driving the tractor to collect the balls, so I was next in line. So yeah, that was pretty, it was amazing. Like, I mean, it was fucking freezing in the winter, but it was good.
Just like collecting the balls or just driving around the place?
Driving the tractor, and it used to have like kind of wheels on the on the front. It used to collect the balls. So I never used to hand collect the balls. It was in this tractor. And obviously my mates, my dad and whatever would come up and pelt fucking drivers at me when I got close to them. So it was always fun and games when they rattled the cage. One of the guys that used to come was Yogi, John Hughes.
Of course, yeah. He used to manage Rafe Rovers for a bit, I believe, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. He used to come up all the time and fucking celebrate so much when he hit the tractor. Every time I see him about Hibs Do's or whatever, I always mention it to him, like, bastard.
Jack, I've just got one more question for you. It's been a pleasure chatting with you tonight. Thank you for sort of going into the band, and I know there's so many more things I could ask you as well, but what would your sort of closing advice be to anyone that listening that maybe wants to get into music or play in a band? And I know you'd already said earlier don't do it, but like what would your closing advice be?
So other than saying don't do it, I would say, yeah, I probably echoed my words, what I said earlier. You need to be dedicated. There's no point in doing it half-hearted. I mean, it totally depends what you want for it. See, if you just want to rattle up some songs on Apple Music or whatever, just and see what happens, then fair enough. But with the pool unsigned artists and up-and-coming artists, you literally, unless you write an absolute worldie and get the best stroke of luck ever, then you'll get pretty much nowhere. You need to set realistic goals for that's definitely number one. Set realistic goals, and if you get above the goals, amazing. If you get below the goals, then at least the hurdle to get to your achievable goal isn't too far away. It's reasonable. I feel like a preacher here or something.
This is your speech. This is your you know, this is your American classic speech.
This is what it should have been. So realistic goals, but the main thing is enjoy it, because it does fly by, especially when you're slogging up and down the country. I mean, the amount of time traveling to the amount of time you actually get on the stage is fucking ridiculous. So those half hour slots or whatever you get, I cherish them. Enjoy them. Enjoy yourselves safely as well. Don't drink too much. But definitely take as much of the rider as you possibly can. Even if it goes into your car or van for the way home, take it. Because you didn't get fuck all. Take everything. Take those custard creams that are sitting in the corner, lad. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. Enjoy it. Be realistic. Always have faith in yourself. Don't ever doubt. Don't compare yourself too much. We get stuck in a rut with that when you go up the band and go, oh, see what they're doing. Everybody's on their own journey. So just enjoy it.
I think very, very good place to end it, Jack. Thank you very much for your kind words and great speech at the end as well. Great preach. Appreciate
Don't
it.
Mind, Jimmy.
No,
Don't
good
mind.
Luck. Good luck with the tour and with the new album. And yeah, pleasure.
Nah, thanks a lot, mate. Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. That was episode 130. Thank you again to Jack and the Raz for chatting to us on the podcast. Greatly appreciated. Be sure to check out their upcoming tour. Be sure to get tickets if they're in your area. And of course, their first album and their new single, Blood for Gold, is all available to listen to now. You can click the link in the show notes or just check them out on Spotify or YouTube or wherever you listen to your music. And if you did enjoy today's episode and you think anyone you're friends with or you know of might enjoy it, be sure to send it to them. Be sure to encourage them to listen. And also, I mean, this is episode 130. We'd had lots of brilliant episodes before. So if you're particularly interested in music, we've recently had Dictator on at the Fringe. We did an episode with them last August. That would be a good one to go and listen to. We'd had lots of other people from the music industry on. So just be sure to have a look through the back catalogue. There's always something you might enjoy, even if it was recorded a little bit ago. But yes, thank you as always for listening. And we'll be back again next Wednesday with another episode of Just Get a Real Job. Just get a real job.